Welcome to the RSP Cast. I'm Matt Waldman with the Rookie Scouting Portfolio. This is episode number 82. It's the second half of a larger session that I did with RSP writer Dwayne McFarlane and in our continuing series on projecting offenses for the 2019 season. Last session, we covered Los Angeles Chargers. This session, number 82, we cover the Oakland Raiders. Now, before I get to that, if you haven't tuned into the Chargers session, I highly recommend listening to Dwayne and I talk about his recent article on how to project offensive players or project offenses. Dwayne is a high-stakes fantasy player who has placed in the top five and I believe 3 to 5 different tournaments in the past 3 to 4 years. These are large, high-stakes tournaments with, you know, at least 8,000 entries. So this is a guy that has put his expertise into play and has had success with it. And the reason that I think it's important for anyone to who is a football fan or an analyst or a beat writer to actually know a little bit more about projections outside of just fantasy football is that projection modeling helps you understand team tendencies and player tendencies, coaches' tendencies, whether it's at certain points of the field, certain points of the, time of the ball game, who they like to distribute to, where and when. And that gives you a better understanding of being able to differentiate what coaches tell you in interviews or in press conferences and what they actually do. And sometimes the coaches are telling you the truth, but they're being vague, and we tend to let our biases get in the way because we don't understand the parameters of what their histories actually show when you look at the data. So this is a really good exercise, whether you are trying to be a better fantasy player or whether you're trying to be a better beat writer and gain more perspective, or a better football analyst and gain more perspective about the teams, because certainly coaches can change how they do things. But when you start to look at the histories a little bit deeper in the way that Dwayne does, and he really goes into great depth about how he's created his projection models and why they've had success in ways that are only really becoming to catch, take hold among people who are, talking about projections in recent years. So I would highly recommend checking this out, even if it's just for you to understand how to look at projections that other people offer and see whether or not there is detailed and offer the kinds of checks and balances and information that they should be offering so that they are a little bit, I wouldn't say necessarily foolproof, but they have a good process, behind them. So definitely recommend checking that out, either reading it at my site, www.mattwaldmanrsp, or just listening to a little bit more from Dwayne about this in the episode number 81. So here we are, going to introduce episode 82, and Dwayne and I get right into it with talk about the Oakland Raiders offense. And, looking at what the Raiders have to offer, this is an interesting team because so many people are down in the community on John Gruden. They think he's a fuddy-duddy. They think he's in over his head. There's a lot of ideas about what John Gruden is and isn't. And then you have Derek Carr, who's considered, on one end, he was a couple years away. It seemed like that he was on his way to really making a breakthrough as a potential franchise quarterback. And now you're wondering if he's a guy that can actually handle pressure well and make good decisions. Is he more Andy Dalton-like with a big arm? Or is he more of a guy that can turn into more of a Philip Rivers type of player at his absolute highest end in terms of just like, absolute potential as a player on the field? And then we have, the move of Antonio Brown and Tyrell Williams. So he's getting, he had Michael Crabtree and Amari Cooper when things were starting to go well, and then that all fell apart. Now we're getting but two guys now who can absolutely go deep, who can absolutely kill you after the catch. And one of them is probably the best, though the most unconventional route runner in the game in Brown. And we look at those two guys. He has some slot receivers of intrigue, including Ryan Grant, Hunter Renfrow, and Dwayne Harris. But then you have these tight ends who they might be interesting. Luke Wilson is an athlete out of Rice who played with with the 49ers. He played with the Seahawks, and he's shown some things in moments, but they also have Darren Waller, who's supposedly having a great camp, former Georgia Tech wide receiver, kind of in the mold of Demaryius Thomas in terms of going up and winning the ball, but not quite as athletic as that. But the light seems to have come on with his game and how he's approached his game. So there's lots of excitement about that. But then there's a rookie in Foster Moreau, who is a big, strong, really quick player, underrated receiver, who's an excellent blocker. Can he make an immediate impact? I mean, that's a question that people are asking. And then we get to this running back stable that lost Marshawn Lynch, who, by the way,
did that
the
one
yards
run, man.
After contact leaders in percentage of yards after contact, just in the limited time that he played before he broke down and ultimately retired. He did do that in one run. That's true. Was it running over Jarrell Casey, I think? And then like the rest of the Titans in that game? I don't know. Might have been. So, yeah, I mean, so you've got that. So they're going to try and replace him with Josh Jacobs. And you've got Jalen Richard, who's become a favorite in some aspects of the fantasy community for his ability to, be a yardage after the catch kind of guy, a receiving back, kind of a West Coast poor man's James White type of thing. And then, we have some intriguing guys like Doug Martin, who most people look at and say, forget about him, he's done. I say that he's kind of suffering from Adrian Peterson syndrome, which is, he hasn't produced well, so people are trying to find reasons to say that he's finished when there might be other reasons involved in that. And then you have the ever intriguing Chris Warren, who, has got the size of a tight end, the hands of a wide receiver, and the stop start quickness and agility of a scat back in a power back, 6'2", 250, 260 pound frame, who intrigued during the preseason last year. So a lot to break down with the Raiders here. That's kind of the overview. What are some salient points that you're looking at, Dwayne, with the Raiders that people need to know about?
Well, I think you hit on three key themes, right? And we can just walk through them, So there's Gruden and the idea that he's a fuddy-dud. And so I'll provide some context there. Then, and we'll talk about how I see the offense as a whole. Then you've got Derek Carr, right? And really, what is Derek Carr? That's the question. And then, and this really goes with, the second thing that I pointed out, which is what does the overall team look like? This is a complete revamp, and that's really where I would start. So when I'm doing projections, one of the first things that I do is I sit down without any intent of am I trying to make a decision or determination or anything? I'm just collecting information, right? And one of the first things I do is I'm sitting down and I'm looking at, how did the roster look at the end of last year, right? Or at whichever point, sometimes, what did the roster look like after injuries ravaged it? All these things go into it. So there's off-season additions through free agency. There's losses through free agency. There's your additions through the draft. And then there are the players that you're expecting to get back healthy that you lost at some point last year. And if you look at the Raiders, you could argue that no team in the league is gone through a bigger roster makeover. So you've got 11 key new faces in Clelin Ferrell, LaMarcus Joyner, Jonathan Abram, Trayvon Mullen. So that's just defense, right? So that's four key new players on defense. That was a defense that was very bad, mind you. Then you've got Antonio Brown, Tyrell Williams, Josh Jacobs. And then to your point, even later in the draft, you've got Hunter Renfrow. Those guys are all going to be expected to contribute. You could argue seven of those players probably are all starters and considered upgrades over what was playing there last season, at least after some point, because we know early on you had Amari Cooper, and then Amari Cooper left. And then you had Seth Roberts and Jordy Nelson, and then Martavis Bryant was kind of off, on again, off again kind of thing. So not a lot of consistency for this team last year. So the way I look at it is, in consideration of what the roster looks like, you have to step back and say, this is going to be better, right? It's going to be better from a standpoint of there's better talent on the team. And so from a standpoint of thinking about Derek Carr, now, whether this translates to wins or not, Vegas doesn't think so. Vegas has the Raiders still at six wins. despite all of these changes. And part of that is, if you look at the Raiders last year, one of the things I like to look at when I'm doing these projections, that's also kind of an insight that I gather early on, is what was their average margin of victory? Or in this case for the Raiders, really, you would call it a margin of loss. It'd be an MOL instead of an MOV. And here's the problem. They need all that help because they were minus 11. That you're minus 11, Matt, you are getting your wheels blown off. Yeah. It's not close. Some teams you'll see that, you know what, man, they only won six games last year. They won seven games, and maybe they had a little bit of momentum at the end of the year, and they've added some new players as well, and their margin of victory was a minus one, right? Yeah. That's what the Bears were before last year. People think, oh, the Bears were a complete resurgence. Yes, they got a better coach that knew how to run the offense. That's what happened. But in the end, the year before, the defense, even before Khalil Mack got there, was already really good and holding them in games. What they needed was that change to get them over the hump. And while a ton of credit deserves to be given to Matt Nagy, the team wasn't terrible to start with, right? You know, the overall roster was okay. Now the Raiders, I mean, they need all of these players to come in and produce. So I think that's why Vegas, you're still going to see Vegas put them around a six, you know, and they'll probably stay around that, you know, area through the preseason, unless a bunch of Raiders fans, you know, move the line. But they have a lot of new players, but they've all got to perform. And we don't, and you know, history tells us that they won't all work out, right? It's just not all those guys are going to be able to make the impact the Raiders hope this season. But if a few of them can, especially on offense, I think that's a good thing, right, for the offense. I think it's a good thing for Derek Carr. You know, the next thing is just taking a quick look at John Gruden. And so part of the reason I think John Gruden gets this, you know, I think you said it best, kind of seen as being a fuddy-dud. And part of it is his pace. His pace is terrible. You know, he's well below the league averages in plays ran per game. And this goes pretty far back, you know, from his time in Tampa. In 2004, he ran 905 plays. Then it was 944, 940, 940. Last year, he ran 940. He's got a couple of seasons sprinkled out through his career where he hit the 1,000 mark. But he just, it's a very slow offense. And so I think that's one thing that just turns people off. From a fantasy perspective, it matters, right? Because that's less plays to go around. John Gruden is not going to run a lot of plays. So I've got him projected at 940 plays again this season. The other issue with Gruden's offenses, I think, is the league has evolved. Back in the days when Gruden was first doing his thing, you know, the amount of passing he was doing was actually seen as cutting edge. And the fact that he was doing it in a horizontal West Coast type of offense was still seen as this cool thing, even though Bill Walsh had already brought it into being in vogue and other coaches had started to create their variations of it. What Gruden was doing, it was still new enough to the league. You know, defenses were still adapting to try to handle it. That's when you saw Tampa 2 blow up. And now what's happening is Gruden's coming back into the league, and now it's a vertical passing game. Teams are working the seams much more than they ever had. The best way to get a completion over 20 yards is to throw down the seams. It's proven in the data. That is the highest percentage play because think about it. That's where you put your mismatch players, and that's where you get those players matched up against slower guys like linebackers and safeties. And running backs are doing so much more downfield. And, you know, Jarrett Moyer and I broke that down a couple of weeks ago on your website, you know, looking at, you know, Jarrett did a great job. I brought the data in, and then he gave a film breakdown of what the Saints and what the Patriots do and how they get their backs more vertical down the field and into situations where they're not the primary read, but they're the second or third read, you know, very quickly. But they're coming out of a break just at the right time and a great mismatch. And it's not a swing pass. And so John Gruden, I think when you look at his average depth of target last year, and if you go watch some of the film, he's doing some new things. I think if people really went and watched him, because I actually did go watch, and it wasn't fun, but I just wanted to see what he was doing as a play caller. He did do more of that. He used Jared Cook in a positive way to his strengths. He used him down the seams, using him vertically. Jared Cook essentially was their top receiver if you look at the whole season, right? But at the same time, the overall picture of the work was still a very you know, just not an explosive offense.
No.
Now, to be fair, some of that, Matt, comes back to playmakers. And when if you go look at, let me see if I've got this written down. I may or I may not. I'm jumping over to Derek Carr now. If you look at Derek Carr, you know, that's an extension of John Gruden. Hang on one second.
Well, as you do that, let me share something, just this little point, and we'll get back to that, is that have to remember that the way this offense was designed, like to me, like last year, I thought, you know, a lot of people were complaining about John that he's a fuddy-duddy, but really, I mean, how much different was he going to be from some of these other West Coast offensive guys? And you brought that up with the seam passes and going more downfield vertical. But I think that what John Gruden really wanted to do was he wanted to make Marshawn Lynch his version of John Riggins, like late stage John Riggins, and be the diesel that just pounds these nickel defenses into submission. And then he can use the play action game off of that. And he didn't need huge speed to do that. Well, he had Amari Cooper, who obviously can do that well, and he did it in Dallas exactly the way that I think Gruden would have liked to have seen it done in Oakland. But then he also had a guy like Jordy Nelson, who maybe didn't have the speed, but a guy that could really be good in play action. But they had to lean on that play action. That offensive line really wasn't all that healthy. Marshawn Lynch, who, you know, when he was on the field, there were moments, there were drives that you look early in the season where you watch him and you go, I see what they were trying to do. Like, I get it. They wanted to really just go back to old school and just be perversely like kind of what the Seahawks did, and just kind of really pound the football, force teams to stack that box, and then just throw it over the top and play old school kind of Raiders football in that sense. And then he could, you know, and if they were successful keeping Lynch healthy, I think they might have had a better chance, because they really, I mean, like when you watched healthy Lynch in some of those games, as a guy who likes watching the running game, it was so much fun. It was just like, it was like watching one of those flashy boxers get hit with body blows and they can't get a punch off. And they're just basically, their game's gone on the ropes at that point. And then it's just like an easy knockout. And the problem was, is that Lynch got hurt soon, early enough that they really couldn't replace that. And once you can't replace that, and you're going that, you're putting all your eggs in that basket, and it's an old basket that Lynch was, you know, the rest of your team is pretty much screwed at that point when he got hurt.
Right. Yeah. And that would be an interesting thing to go back and look at. I could potentially run that against all the play-by-play stuff. I'm just jotting down some notes, because the one thing I noticed with Gruden overall last year, and this is where, you know, you only had Lynch, I think, for 7 games. His play action percentage was really low.
Yeah.
It was in the bottom third of the league. It was 18%. They were also getting blown out. The interesting thing, you know, with Derek Carr is, if you go back and look at his, before they got rid of Amari Cooper, and this would have also been when Marshawn Lynch was cooking, right?
Right.
Derek Carr was on pace for 4,755 yards.
Yeah.
Wow. When Cooper and Marshawn Lynch were both playing together. Now, the guy can't throw a touchdown to save his damn life. He was on pace for 19 even then.
Yeah.
You know, and I think part of that is Carr as a structure guy. He doesn't, if people have, you know, go listen to the last episode and you talk about Phillip Rivers and his ability, right, to not just, or even just go read Mark Schofield's article at the RSP this week that talks about the difference between a baker and a chef. I think Derek Carr is a baker.
Yeah.
Everything's got to go right. It's in the structure of the play. I'm making every read. And if it's not, if the read's not immediately there the way I want it to be, I'm moving on. And it's not that it's bad, but he misses plays. He misses touchdowns. He misses things that the better quarterbacks like Rivers and Brady and even Mahomes, you see Mahomes do this all the time, and in a little bit of a different way sometimes, more through an extension of the play, right, versus early on in the play. But that's something that I just see being a problem for Derek Carr. But the positive being is you now add Antonio Brown, right, and you add Josh Jacobs to help you with that play action. So there is a glimmer of hope, at least from a yardage standpoint. You know, I would guess most people haven't looked at that. And so that's, I mean, I'm sure some have, but that's a pretty big deal. I mean, because he finished up, what did he finish the year with last year, Matt? I don't know if you have it in front of you.
I don't.
But I want to say it was right at 4,000 yards. It was his career. I want to say it was his career high. Actually, I'm pulling it up right now. So I got it right here. Yeah. So it was his career high in yardage by how many? Sorry.
That's okay. And
all right. Yeah. 4,049 yards. So his previous high had been 3,938, 3,987. So it wasn't way over it. But being on pace for 4,700 would have been, that's a huge jump versus his career high. Now, his touchdowns per attempt last year were only, it was a 2.2%, which, like we said, is terrible. The year before, a 3.4%. But even though he operates within structure and that's really, you know, bad, I don't know, back to your point, how much of it, right, can we put, sorry, last year he was 3.4%. How much of it can we put? I had Carr in my query, Matt. So I got David Carr in 2007. That was a 2.2%. His brother sucked. So anyway, sorry.
All right, sorry.
That was Carolina. Carolina in 2007 was a bad year for David Carr.
There you go.
But for Derek Carr, 3.4% last year, and the yardage was still right. To your point, though, I don't know how much of that we can necessarily pile on, you know, David Carr. I do think he has the limitations that we talked about. From a touchdown perspective and his ability to create outside of the play. But I do think that the players around him are going to help. Now, so here are the things that – here's my – I talked about this last episode around Phillip Rivers. One thing I do with every quarterback is I go look at all of the different situations and how they do across these different areas. It's much deeper than you don't want to, I mean, completion percentage is great. He was a career high last year, 69%, but by far it was his lowest average depth of target, 7 yards. And I think part of that's Gruden. That's the way Gruden's offense, you know, operates. So that is part of it. But if you look at Derek Carr from a standpoint of breaking down, what about how good of a deep passer is he? Actually, his deep passing hasn't been terrible. It's just been inconsistent.
Yeah.
Last year, he hit 45% of his passes over 20 yards. That almost matches his career high of 46% in 2016. Here's his issue. In 2017, it drops to 30. In 2015, it was a 37. In 2014, it was a 21. That's an area of his game that he's just got to be able to be more consistent at. The other component of it is John – in the scheme, he only attempted 9% of his passes further than 20 yards. That's one of the bottom in the league. So he's just not taking those kind of throws. Now, whether it's you don't have the players to do it or how much of it's scheme, I think a lot of that's debatable, you know, to your point. But if you look at him under pressure, this is what destroys Derek Carr.
Yeah.
Under pressure, here are his last few years. Actually, I'm just going to total them to make it easy for the listeners. So over his career under pressure, he's got 24 touchdowns and he's got 32 picks. You cannot throw that many picks. His picks per pressure percentage they're really, really bad. And teams know this. So when it's a key down and they know that the Raiders pass, Derek Carr is in trouble.
This is why you keep asking me about the RSP knockout factor on quarterbacks because of Derek Carr, failing him on his ability to handle pressure, and now we're looking at him in his pro career, and basically, it's what was seen on tape,
right? And it's I remember you talking about that, and I remember that being that knockout criteria, and yeah, we've had those conversations, and it's the reason. I mean, honestly, thanks to you, because I was just starting to get into this kind of data, and I didn't obviously have it for him in college, but looking at it, you were dead on. He cannot deal with pressure. And his touchdowns per attempt, he does not make teams pay for pressure. So it's not it. Some quarterbacks like Phillip Rivers, we talked about last week or the last episode, he will still throw some picks at a higher rate, but he throws enough. He makes enough big plays that he concerns teams with how much pressure they want to send against him.
Yes.
Derek Carr is the opposite. When you send pressure at him, not only does he throw picks, he doesn't throw touchdowns. He does not make you pay. And so his touchdowns per attempt under pressure, 3%, 2%, and barely making 3% the year before. It's really bad.
Yeah.
So it's a head thing for Carr. He makes pre-snap reads. I'm fairly certain he's good at those.
Yeah.
Post-snap, when things scramble on him, he gets into trouble. And, you know, Matt, you and I talked about last year because I did the article on Amari Cooper, right, before he left. And one of the things I talked with you about is I said, you know, I see Amari just stop running certain routes, but I almost feel like it's because he knows Derek Carr so well that he's like, there's no way he's coming here because the dude doesn't process the information.
Yeah.
And what's funny is it wasn't just Amari Cooper. Last year I was watching a pass with Derek Carr where literally his receiver did the same thing and just stopped on him, and it was a pick six. I think it was against the Chargers. I can't remember who it was at receiver, but it wasn't just Amari. It's literally he freaks out, and his receivers are honestly, yes, they should continue running their route, but I think it's almost this thing where they've practiced so much with him and they know the guy so well. It's like this is not within the structure of what's supposed to happen unless he literally just hits the panic button.
Yeah, there's a cloud of flour, you know, that have basically blew up around and enveloped Derek Carr, and they're at the oven waiting for, you know, waiting to get the hand off of that treat that he made. And he just, then you look at that cloud and go, well, it's never getting to the oven.
But what's amazing, Matt, is when you contrast it with when you keep him clean and he's not pressured, he puts up elite numbers.
Yep.
15 touchdowns and 2 picks last year.
Yeah.
The year before, 20 touchdowns and 4 picks. The year before, 25 touchdowns and 3 picks. These are that,
yeah.
You can put those ratios up against anyone when kept clean, but he self-destructs under pressure. So there are positives, but he's a hard guy to want to project and give too much to, because in the NFL, you're going to face pressure.
Yeah, he's a fair weather. And the fair weather quarterback.
Yes, exactly. And guess what? Kudos to him, because there's a lot of quarterbacks that can't even do that.
True.
So that tells me, one, you know, he's really good within structure, and this is based off of things I've read from you and then just watching him as well. Pre-snap, he's fine. He gets it. But when things don't go right, or he gets something, you know, like pressure, it's a problem. The one other thing that kind of concerns me with him and concerns me with what, going back to what you mentioned, which is what Gruden wants to do, he does not do well when, and I think this, think about it. Now, we're assuming some things here, but this is why I think it's so important to pull all these pieces together and data and look at them. He is only 1 year in his whole career, Matt, thrown for a higher yards per attempt on play action passes. And think about it. What do you have to do when you go to do a play action pass?
Turn your back to the defense.
And then he has to turn around and reacclimate. He does. My gut tells me right now, and this is a big thing that I hear you and Jarrett Moyer talk about a lot on Twitter, and I love it. I think it's probably the most under-scouted area, and it makes me want to literally dig into this data. It's like I want to just partner with you and say, okay, if we could figure out a good way of measuring somebody's processing skills,
right,
by using data to supplement film, it would be like a $1 million idea. And so, like, this example is perfect, right? So we already know he can't handle pressure. We know he's really good before the snap, but now all of a sudden I have to turn my back to it. The typical quarterback in the league, the play action is just a flat out cheat code. It literally is almost unstoppable unless you face Bill Belichick like the Rams did, and he tells his linebackers literally the whole 2 weeks before, you do not bite on play action ever against the Rams. You just don't. But most coaches aren't, they don't get that out of their players, and it creates windows of opportunity for quarterbacks. And for whatever reason, Derek Carr hasn't been able to capitalize. In fact, his yards per attempt, it's not just that it's bad, it's terrible. It's a minus 0.3, a minus 0.6, a minus 0.5. He had a 1.4 in 2015 and then a minus 0.6 in 2014. And so for me, like the tapestry here of like weaving all these things together, and it's nothing for certain, but if you start putting percentages on it, I think you pair what you saw in scouting, and then you pair the way he handles pressure, and then now seeing this play action data, I think it's pretty clear that Derek Carr's limited.
Yeah, and here's some points just to think about in another way. Before Michael Crabtree suffered an Achilles injury, and even after, because he was with Carr and had a good season or two with Carr, and even though in Baltimore he didn't do so well, and people are kind of like, are recently down on Michael Crabtree. When you think about him as a player throughout the length of his career, he was the model that most young receivers were like, well, I asked guys at the Senior Bowl, who's a receiver that you study and why? And literally everybody was Michael Crabtree for his route running. Okay. I mean, it was like the unanimous answer. I was surprised, you know, to be honest. I knew he's a good route runner and I've admired his route running, but I was surprised that his name came up as often as the first name out of their lips. You have Antonio Brown, who might be the most unconventional route runner, who doesn't do things by the book on the level that you would expect, who's played with a playground-like quarterback, who's the exact opposite of Derek Carr. It's like, let him run around, make him turn his back to the defense, let things break down. He's going to do – if you make things break down, that's worse for your defense probably when it comes to – at least from the anecdotal level with Ben Roethlisberger. So then you have Tyrell Williams. Tyrell Williams played with Phillip Rivers, who we just explained is also the antithesis of Derek Carr in terms of under pressure. So did Derek Carr just inherit two receivers – who don't do things by the book and are used to playing with cooks and are more like more guys who are sous chefs in a, you know, as opposed to, you know, sous chefs for a baker. And does that mean that now Carr's not going to be able to get the most out of these guys, or is he going to be able to communicate with Brown, or are we going to be looking at Brown going TO on Derek Carr's Jeff Garcia? I mean, is this going to be like one of those deals where, to me, there's a real trapdoor downside for this team because of that particular element of, is Derek Carr going to get the most out of that? And is Antonio Brown and Tyrell Williams, who may have worked with quarterbacks where when they practice the game and the game plan, it all looks good on in air. It all looks good on 7-on-7 or 11-on-11 and in artificialized environments where you don't have a lot of this improvising going on. But then when the game starts and Brown's like, I'm expecting some improvisation here, and Williams, I'm expecting some improvisation here, are you going to come to me on the bench and start telling me about stuff, or I'm going to come to you on the bench and start telling you about things? And then suddenly Carr's not going to be doing it. By game 7, is Antonio Brown going to be screaming at the media about, you know, what kind of quarterback David Carr isn't? You know, that's where I'm a little concerned, or Derek Carr, excuse me, but Derek Carr isn't, because that's where I could be really concerned with this, looking at it from that perspective. And I love your idea. I mean, yeah, if we could figure out a way to show how players process the game in a way where you could have some sort of linchpin that shows where they are and they are not very clearly, you know, it would be an excellent thing to be able to do.
Yeah, I think you're hitting something huge here. I think John Gruden has his work cut out for him this year, as not only as a coach, but as a manager of people. Mm-hmm. He is going to have a lot of work to keep what you just said happening.
Yeah.
Because you know it's going to be in Antonio Brown's mind, and it won't take long. It's going to be in his mind because it's going to happen week one. It's going to happen in the preseason, but when the real bullets start flying, and it's going to happen in week one, and Antonio Brown is going to be thinking, man, I used to run this route, and then even though it wasn't open, I would do this because I saw this, and Ben would give me that tad extra second, and then he'd do this. Now, Brown probably won't admit it because he's, you know, so butthurt with Ben right now, but he and Roethlisberger are going to both miss each other a ton, and Antonio Brown is probably going to be a ticking time bomb this season.
Yeah.
Because there is a chance, because think about it, Matt. Amari Cooper is a really good receiver too, but he's not an outspoken, he's not a super brash, hey, I'm going to come out and be open about it in public. He's more of a quiet, reserved kind of guy, right? Yeah. And he might have actually been one of the better fits for Carr from a public lens. I'm sure they had their conversations, you know, between them, but Amari kept those private. Antonio Brown's not going to do that.
Yeah.
And then if you look at what Amari did once he got to Dallas, right? And Dak Prescott has some similar issues to Derek Carr as far as reading defenses, but he will improvise when he needs to. Yes. And he will stick with a guy.
Yeah.
And it showed up twice in the Redskin game, exactly that kind of thing happening for huge plays that he didn't get from Derek Carr. So when I think about Antonio Brown, Is he the best receiver in the league? Probably. But is Amari Cooper like three tiers down from him? No, I don't think so. I think Amari Cooper with the right quarterback and the right scheme, people could very well be talking about as being a top five receiver because he's always open. His route running's great. His separation is great. He plays at every level of the field. You can give him a slant for 80 yards or you can throw it down the field and just say, hey, go get it. There's not a lot of guys in the league that can do everything he does. He just isn't as brash about it and doesn't say, look at me like a lot of these other guys. But as a receiver, I believe Amari Cooper is one of the better receivers in the league. And so I think this is going to be a problem with
Antonio. I agree. That's my point is that you had Michael Crabtree and Amari Cooper and you could get it done. Like that's where I'm at is like, even though they've downplayed both of those guys, you know, I'm just kind of laughing because if you asked me in their primes, and they weren't that far off there. Michael Crabtree wasn't far off his prime. If you ask me, would I rather have Michael Crabtree and Amari Cooper or Antonio Brown and Tyrell Williams? It's not as easy a decision for me as it would be for some other people. And when you really study,
I would take Crabtree and Cooper.
I pretty much would too. And that's kind of where I'm at. I mean, like I can understand in terms of professionals, I would take Crabtree and Cooper. In terms of route runners, both, I'd take both of those guys. So, yeah, you've just got better athletes now in Antonio Brown and Tyrell Williams, just marginally so, you know?
So knowing what you know, Matt, and you've been evaluating quarterbacks and putting a solid process behind it for a long time, and then I just share this kind of data with you that kind of backs up what you've seen. What are the chances that Carr can truly change his stripes, or what can John Gruden? I think the scheme can protect you to some extent, but it can never fully take away the fact that defenses in certain situations are going to have the upper hand against Derek Carr and be able to confuse him. So when I sit here and think about it, I got to think at some point, it's just like, I don't think Carr can do it, but am I wrong?
I'll put it to you this way. Usually as we're doing these shows, and I update my weekly projections and rankings at Football Guys. I'm usually kind of color coding these sections of my spreadsheet for each team and code them with like, you know, basically green, yellow, red. Red meaning I need to decrease. Yellow, I need to take a second look at this. Green meaning I need to increase. I may be marking this entire Oakland roster in red and basically putting red rum over it, like at the end of this show. Because as I was talking, I'm going, wow, I'm way too optimistic on Derek Carr now. The more that I think about this, because I had Antonio Brown pretty darn low, and then I bumped him up some. And now I'm thinking I need to go back to where I was with him because it's just this doesn't look good. This whole situation doesn't look good. And no, I don't think Derek Carr is going to change because I don't think that if he couldn't do it with Cooper and if he couldn't do it with Cooper and Crabtree, I don't know who, I don't know what Brown's even less conventional. I mean, to me, just
well, to be fair, just give it a little context though. So in 16 and 17, he did have a 5% and a 5.6 touchdown per attempt. Yeah. And his interceptions were at a 1.1 and a 2.3. Now, since then, it's gone off the cliff.
Yeah.
But so when he did truly have Crabtree healthy and,
he was pretty good.
He was. Now, it doesn't change the fact that under pressure, he was still bad. When he was kept clean, he did all of his damage. In those 2 years, kept clean, 25 touchdowns, 3 picks, 25 touchdowns, 7 picks, right?
Yeah.
If you looked at him with his play action, it still was a problem. When you looked at him under pressure in those years, it was still a problem. He just managed it.
Yeah.
He threw 3 touchdowns and 3 picks, 7 touchdowns and 6 picks versus the last couple of years has been 4 touchdowns, 8 picks, 2 touchdowns, 9 picks. You know, the whole thing just got away from him. So I feel like, one, he is what – here's what my gut says. My gut says Derek Carr is what he is.
Yep.
And he – don't ask him to deal with pressure and do it well. You've got to find ways to keep your offense on schedule so he's not in obvious passing situations. And you've got to find ways to protect him. The problem is one of the ways Gruden's going to want to do it is play action, and he's never done that well.
Right.
So that's where I get – the stripes are probably – on, they're not just painted, they probably really are tattooed into his skin. But what ways could you see Gruden potentially overcoming it. Yeah.
It's a tough.
He did it at one point, but I don't know.
Yeah, you're going to need that offensive line to play lights out. The running game's going to have to be like, you know, unbelievable, and a level where that they don't have to do the play action that they do is really forward facing play action out of a pistol type of look, which maybe Josh Jacobs will be better at than say Marshawn Lynch. So maybe there's a little bit of that involved with it. But, you know, before we move on to projections, you kept talking about Antonio Brown and being a little butthurt with Ben Roethlisberger. And this image just kind of came to mind. I want you to imagine just like the movies and imagine that Ben Roethlisberger is played by Will Ferrell and you have Antonio Brown by Kevin Hart. And then we can cast Derek Carr as either like, what's his name? The guy who was Will Ferrell's kind of partner in Talladega Nights. He could either be that guy or be the pit car dude who was the stalker.
John C. Riley or whatever.
Yeah. It's either Derek Carr either could be John C. Riley or he could be, the stalker guy from the skating movie, you know, and you know, whichever one you want to see fall apart, you know, and you could have this like whole movie play out with like then both getting cut and reunited by another. Basically the same movie as, you know, Talladega Nights and Blades of Glory, you know, and you could.
Who does John Gruden play? You just go and he's just sticking with Chucky and that somehow works in or what?
Yeah. John Gruden. I mean, who does he play? I don't know. That's a good question. He could be himself. I mean, he's himself. He's done so many of these different things, but yeah, I mean, it's like we could certainly, I could see Ben Roethlisberger, you know, Will Ferrell is Ben Roethlisberger and Antonio Brown is Kevin Hart. And it might be the funniest movie Kevin Hart's ever actually done. you kind of almost hope that justice would lead you to a Will Ferrell like ending where they both end up on a different team and count it out and like reunite and actually play well together. But I don't think that's ever going to happen.
Well, I know one thing you saw probably just like me before we moved to the skill positions that so much hinges on the quarterback is going back and watching those games. Usually I'll watch the all 22, but I will flip over like to the, to the broadcast version of it at times to look at certain things or to hear like, especially like if a player gets hurt or whatever, and you want to hear what happened with this injury. One of the things that I noticed, you know, as the season wore on was John Gruden was losing his patience with Derek Carr.
Yes.
Big time. And I think the stuff we're talking about is why, because I don't want to paint a narrative here, but I can almost, you know, when you think about it, it's like, dude, I'm doing everything I can to help you. Help me help you.
Yes.
Like, help me help you is what I imagine is going through his brain. Cause he's standing there and some of it's not words, you know, with Gruden, he's always got the scowl, but I mean, it is like his head's about to pop off.
Yeah.
And he's just staring him down, coming up, and Carr wants no part of it. He's just like, okay, heading over here, going to get some Gatorade, coach, going to go look at the freaking iPad.
I think if Carr is John C. Riley, then Mike Glennon is Napoleon Dynamite. So we can like have Napoleon Dynamite come into the game after that. And that's when basically Kevin Hart basically loses his mind right there and decides he wants a trade. But I agree with you. He did look frustrated, and the fact that Mike Glennon actually is now on this team, and that's kind of an interesting development in itself, kind of a little subplot that may happen here. But, you know, getting into projections, I mean, I have Carr right now, and I think this is optimistic now after our conversation, but I'm going to have to revisit. I probably maybe put this whole sheet in yellow at this point for me, but it's Derek Carr at 563 attempts, and I have you about 950, plays for this team. I've projected two running backs in a way where there's kind of some overlap in ways that I wouldn't count one of those running backs. I'll just put it that way. So the true number is about 940 for me. 563 attempts, 67% completion rate. I have him at 4,191 in terms of yardage at a 7.44 yards per attempt. I gave him a 4.4% touchdown to attempt rate. So I gave him a generous 25 touchdowns. And I have him splitting the difference at 2.5% interception to attempts at 14 interceptions. And, you know, like Philip Rivers, he's athletic looking, but you're not going to get him to run a whole lot. I have about 47 yards for him as a runner and a touchdown.
We're almost exactly the same. I've got 65% completion, 7.25. That's 3,950 yards. I've got him at a touchdown on 4.5%. So I gave him a slight bump based on getting Antonio Brown. That might be too much. Again, I was going by the years where he had Crabtree and Cooper and he was at a 5%, but I didn't go all the way there, you know, so yeah. I moved him up towards that, but I still kept in mind what's happened the last couple of seasons, as well. You know, I've got his interceptions at 2%. So that's 25 touchdowns and 11 interceptions. But I'm with you. Even though that is, you know, my median projection for him, whenever I look at his projection spectrum, the low end, like you call it, the trap door. The trap door is very bleak. Yeah. It could go really bad. And the reason why is because he could literally just get pulled. You know, Gruden has shown he will do that. Oh, he will move on. He will move on from a guy. And you know what? They've got to find something out. Because if they're bad again this year, even though Gruden's got a 10-year deal, he's got to do something in year three. And it's going to let him – he's got to know, does he have anything in Mike Glennon or someone else on his roster? At some point, if Derek Carr's not doing it, he's going to want to at least make that call or at least try to make – if he feels Glennon can at least run play action or do some of these other things he wants to do, even though his accuracy may not be as good, he may feel that the benefit of that – outweighs what Derek Carr brings him from an accuracy standpoint. So I think there are several scenarios. And like I said earlier, John Gruden, one of his main roles is just going to be managing people and trying to figure out how to get them to all sing kumbaya together, because Antonio Brown's not going to be happy.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a problem. So I think there's a major trap door. Now, I do believe that there is a realistic, you know, I wouldn't say realistic ceiling. I believe there could be upside, you know, there, but it would have to come from, like you said, not so much Derek Carr. It would literally be everything having to fall into place. Yeah. The offensive line would have to play really well. Josh Jacobs and the running game would need to be going really well. Derek Carr would have to adapt the scheme, or Derek Carr would have to show some sort of improvement we haven't seen, which is doubtful at this point in his career with his back turned. So let's say Gruden knows it. I love that. I wrote that point down. I would love to watch for that in the preseason. Like, you know, are they using more pistol or something like that? That's the kind of stuff you don't get from just numbers, right? But when you take the numbers and then you go look at the film and you think how they're integrating the two, it makes sense. So I think there's, if everything went perfectly, there is some upside here, but I wouldn't call it realistic. I would call it more of a probably fool's gold, because it's going to take so many things to happen for it to work out that it's most likely that the odds are just against it.
Yeah, it's a total wish, you know. I think so. So yeah, I mean, looking at this particular situation, I mean, I think really what we should be projecting are the odds that John Gruden will be picking either Tua Tagovailoa or Justin Herbert next year. And I would bet he picked Justin Herbert because that's the one that I think is going to be the most likely to bust. And Gruden hasn't been very good about picking quarterbacks. He runs through them like basically some, you know, like some people run through, you know, tissue paper when they have a cold. I mean, it's just like,
well, I mean, the two best for him, right, were Rich Gannon,
yep,
a majorly seasoned veteran, and another one, Brad Johnson.
Yeah.
A guy that had been around the league forever, you know? So I think, but two guys that he felt, if you think back to Gannon, you know, and I saw Gannon live, you know, one time against the Cowboys, and the guy, talk about a guy that processes the game.
Oh yeah.
I mean, that guy was a, you know, he was not a mental midget. He was more of a savant.
Yeah.
You know, taking a very limited, you know, okay skill set, but applying it, you know, in a way that, you know, where the sum of his, you know, parts ended up being worth a lot more than his parts. You know?
He had a pocket. He had the pocket vision of like a fly in a room full of fly swatters, but like not near a window, you know? So it was like, you could never get him. It was like unbelievable how he could move around in space like that and just get away. But I mean, you look at this, I mean,
you know, when we just talk about how this passing game breaks down, I mean, Antonio Brown, I mean, right now I bumped him up some, and I still don't think, I still have him lower than a lot of people. I have him at about 145 targets, 89 receptions, 1,250 yards for 14 yards per catch and 9 touchdowns. Tyrell Williams, I have at 74 targets, 46 catches and 655 yards for 6 touchdowns. And then, you know, there's a mix of guys we can look in here. I've given more of an upside projection to Hunter Renfrow, giving him 71 targets, 51 catches for 534 yards, 10 yards a catch and 2 touchdowns. Though you can probably divvy that out among 3 to 4 receivers and maybe a tight end and that, and mix that up, you know, because after that, really the receiver that I'm most, I'm bullish on isn't a tight end or a receiver after, say, Tyrell Williams. It's Jalen Richard at 68 catches for 607 yards and a touchdown off 81 targets, only because I just don't see this running game working. I see Derek Carr checking down and getting yelled at by Antonio Brown and not being able to make great decisions under pressure other than just giving the ball away, you know, either to the defense or to the running back. And at Josh Jacobs, I have at 34 targets, 26 catches, and 187 yards and a touchdown. Not really big totals here. So then when you look at, like, the tight ends, I'm kind of split right now. I don't have anything for Darren Waller because I'm waiting to see whether that training camp thing is true. And if it is, then I may end up taking a majority of what I have for Luke Wilson and Foster Moreau and add it up and give it to Waller if he really blows it out of the box. But right now, at Luke Wilson, I have at 40 targets, 25 catches, 270 yards for a couple of touchdowns. Foster Moreau, close to that, 37 targets, 26 catches, 281 yards for 2 touchdowns. So I basically kind of hedged my bets on who one of these two tight ends would be and not included Waller. But if Waller turns out to be the guy, I may just say, all right, fine, we'll give him something like 77 targets, 51 catches, you know, something along the, you know, close to 600 yards and 4 touchdowns. And there you go. That's if I'm convinced that he actually is part of that. Otherwise, I'll be mixing all of that up.
Yeah. How many yards did you say again for Antonio Brown?
1,250.
Okay. Yeah. We're really close on several of these. We're real close on AB. I've got him at 28%, 153. So 28% of the targets for 153. I've got him at 92 catches. You said 89. So we're right there. I've got him at 1,145 yards versus the 1,250. And I've got him at 7 touchdowns.
Okay.
And this is a team where, to your point also, I've only projected right at 80% of the targets because there's so much unknown around the tight ends and as well outside of Antonio Brown and Tyrell Williams, who's really going to be next in line past, you know, Josh Jacobs and Jalen Richard. So I've left room basically for once we figure out what the roles of Hunter Renfrow and J.J. Nelson and all these tight ends are going to be, you know, that I can come back and kind of, you know, fill this in as we learn more through the preseason. But for right now, I've got the number 2 target is Tyrell Williams with 16%. So that's behind the 28% that we've already given to Antonio Brown. So that's 87 targets, but I've got him working a deeper area of the field. So that's 48 catches for 15 yards per catch for 700 yards. And I've got him at 5 touchdowns versus the 7 for Antonio Brown. Right now, I do have Hunter Renfrow projected, you know, as the 4th option. I'm like you. I have Jalen Richard as the 3rd option in the passing game right now. I've got him at 10% of the targets. Check down. Charlie Derek Carr loves him some Jalen Richard, so I don't see that changing. Yards per, he's really good though. Yards per catch, 9 yards per catch. It's not like it's you know, a proposition where, you know, you're totally going broke just because Jalen Richard actually is so good with the ball in his hands as a receiver. So 400 yards receiving for Richard and 2 touchdowns receiving. I've got Josh Jacobs at 7% of the targets, and much of that is due to, honestly, some of the work you did on Josh Jacobs and talking about just, you know, how well-rounded of a back that he actually is. So I gave him 7%. I do see Jalen Richard being the change of pace, 2-minute drill guy, but I think Josh Jacobs is good enough that he will see some targets. So that's 38 targets, 31 receptions, 244 yards, and I gave him 1 touchdown. Like I said, the rest of these guys, I've got a little bit here and there. It's not really probably worth, you know, right now I I've got, you know, Darren Waller, Foster Moreau, Luke Wilson, and Derek Carrier are all just underlined, and it says need role clarity. Like I have no clue. So I didn't put a chip on any of them yet, but like I said, I just left headroom. I'm only at 80%. So I've got another 20%, you know, basically to play with once.
No, that makes absolute sense. It is. It's a fascinating team. I mean, in terms of if you're looking at it from a soap opera like perspective and what's going to unfold, and there's talent on this team for sure, but it is, you know, the really hidden thing here is nobody's really talking about on the team about how bad Derek Carr can be in bad moments, because they're all playing up the confidence of how good he is when everything's going right. And football teams like to talk about, well, we're focused on what we can make happen go right, you know, what we can do when things go right, as opposed to how do we adjust when things go wrong, you know. And then it's just like, yeah.
I mean, and the other potential thing with Carr, Matt, is that the league just figured him out.
Yeah.
I mean, at times, you know, pressure is a simple thing that they're going to test a young quarterback really early, right, with pressure. I mean, that happens to every rookie, has to go through that phase. But there's some, it could very well be Derek Carr's first 2 years where he did okay, because really the year after he still had Crabtree and Cooper. It's not like they were gone when his demise started. Now, the offensive line, I think, did start to take a little bit of a step back. But the other component could literally be that defenses have figured out, here are the two things Derek Carr likes most, and it's not that hard to take them away. So let's take these two things away and then sprinkle in pressure, yeah, and he's done. It could
That's
be
very
that
true. Too. So listen, this was absolutely, you know, an awesome show. It was a fun show to be able to do. I encourage you to check out Dwayne McFarland's How to Do Projections on the Rookie Scouting Portfolio website. Really great article from someone who is had a fair amount of success, a really strong track record of success over the past 5 years in large fantasy high stakes tournaments. And that is Dwayne McFarland. And you can find also the rest of his work in terms of RSP Film Room and Data and his Unskew Your View pieces at the website. Include also, you get to see him at Football Guys with his projection spectrum pieces, and at the RSP newsletter, we're going to have some exclusive content from him as well beginning this month that RSP subscribers will get to enjoy. Thanks again, everyone, for listening. We're going to continue this series until we've pretty much gone through all the teams. So stay tuned for next week when we continue on with these NFL offensive projections with Dwayne McFarland. Have a good day.